Okay. Good afternoon and welcome to the very fun Senate Environment and Natural Resources Committee. For Wednesday, May 8th, we're going to start backwards on the agenda today and open up a work session. Actually, no, it is listed as the first one. We're going to open up a public hearing. Well, we could do work sessions.
Would you make up your mind?
Okay. We're going to start with work sessions because I have everybody here and I never know what's going to happen.
Of course.
So with that, we will go ahead and start with a work session on House Bill 2247. Did you say of course?
Yes. Of course control.
All right. Beth, will you remind us about this very important bill?
Madam Chair, House Bill 2247 with a no revenue impact and a minimal fiscal impact statement. It repeals the statutes relating to GORS, the GORS control account. It repeals the statute requiring the use of agriculture experiment stations to eradicate algae and detrimental weeds and grasses from waters, as well as the statute requiring the posting of cleaning requirements on certain agriculture machinery.
All right, we are in a work session. I'll entertain a motion.
Madam Chair, I will make a motion only if I get to carry this beautiful bill, too. I like these good bills.
Seriously? I was going to ask the weed guy to carry it.
No, I want to do GORS.
Do you guys want to?
I got fish carcasses and crab pots. I want GORS.
I will defer to the senior member of my caucus.
Okay.
Madam Chair, I move that House Bill 2247 be reported out of committee with a due pass recommendation.
Okay. The senator also moves House Bill 2247 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion about GORS?
Of course not.
Yeah.
Of course not.
Preview of your speech.
Yes, we can see what the floor speech is going to be like.
Second thought, I would like to hear.
I'm thinking that as well. Is there any further discussion? Seeing none, the clerk will call the roll.
Senator
Bates. Aye.
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 Aye. With that, the motion carries.
I was going to say no.
So do we need to have a fist of fight about who's carrying the GORS bill, or
one can open, one can close.
Yes, I think we're going to have. I think we're going to have a co-carriers for this bill.
We're going to have a full 20 minutes.
So just note for the record that Senator Olson and Senator Hansel would like to co-carry this bill.
Jesus.
With that, we will close the work session on House Bill 2247. I wish all of our bills were being fought over.
Madam
about
Chair, we need to weed out who's better.
Oh man. Really bad.
Oh gosh.
Did great anyone day. Tell you that the pun is the lowest form of humor?
You handle that sticky situation.
Right.
Before we go further down that hole, we'll open up a work session on House Bill 3199A, and I know who's carrying this one.
Madam Chair, House Bill 3199A has a no revenue impact to minimal fiscal impact, and it establishes that a person commits a Class A violation if during the fire season declared for Forest Protection District or part of district, the person releases a sky lantern or discharges exploding target or tracer ammunition on land inside district or within an eighth of a mile of the district.
Okay,
Madam Chair, I move that House Bill 3199A be reported out of committee with a due pass recommendation.
Okay, Senator also moves House Bill 3199A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion?
Madam
Senator
Chair,
Hansel?
Just real quick, it's been. I want to make sure for the record it's been brought to by another senator that does this preclude fireworks and that sort of thing?
I don't think so.
That was my understanding.
Not the way that I read it. But, Beth, do you want to...
could get a further designation from Legislative Council if you wanted, but so that it defines an exploding target as designated for use or used as a target for small arms ammunition.
Okay.
Consisting of a flammable substance or flammable combination of substances and capable of exploding when struck by small firearms. So,
but we could, I'll tell you what, can we table this work session we'll recess it and we'll call up Ledge Council and see if they can come and then we could open up the other work session.
Perfect.
Is that okay, Senator?
Sure.
Okay. So Jennifer will...
I'll call us soon.
Okay.
This was skyrockets in the night.
I don't know. Maybe we should just close this work session and reopen it later until...
What did you have for lunch?
I know. Okay, so we are going to recess this work session on House Bill 3199A until we get clarification. We'll go ahead and open up our last work session, which is on HJM 7.
Madam Chair, HJM 7 urges Congress to increase investment in Drinking Water State Revolving Fund and Clean Water State Revolving Fund to upgrade and repair public water and wastewater systems. There's a no revenue and a no fiscal impact.
Okay, I will take a motion. We are in work session on this.
Madam Chair, I move that HJM 7 be reported out of committee with a recommendation that it be adopted.
Okay, Senator Olson moves that HJM 7 be reported out of committee with a recommendation that it be adopted. Is there any discussion? Hey, clerk, call the roll, please.
Senator Bates?
Aye.
Senator Hansel?
Aye.
Senator Hatch?
Aye.
Vice Chair Olson?
Aye.
Chair Dinkfelder?
Aye. With that, the motion carries. And is there any carriers for this bill? Anybody who would like to carry the bill?
I'm not carrying anybody else's water.
Oh. Just for that.
I know.
Senator Bates, I think you're going to have to carry that.
That's what you decided.
Yeah, I guess that's decided. So HJM 7 goes to Senator Bates, who will carry the water. With that, we will close the work session on HJM 7. And we'll go ahead and open up our first public hearing, and then we'll get Ledge Council to come up and clarify that work session. So we'll go ahead and open up a public hearing on House Bill 3103A. And Beth, why don't you give us an overview, and we'll have Palmer come up.
Madam Chair and committee members, House Bill 3103A.
Did I just say work session? I said public hearing. Okay. I just want to make sure it's public hearing on House Bill 3103A.
It would require oil spill plans for facilities exporting petroleum to a ship while excluding smaller scale facilities like marinas or public fueling stations.
Okay. Palmer, would you like to come up and tell us why we need this bill today? What is this bill trying to fix?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Palmer Mason. I'm the Government Relations Manager for the Department of Environmental Quality. I have with me today Scott Smith. He is an oil spill contingency planner at the department, and he's actually going to take you through the bill, the reasons why, and what it does, and I'll let him get started if I can.
Great. Thank you.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Scott Smith. I'm Oregon DEQ's oil spill contingency planner, and I enforce the regulations that involve transfers of oil from vessels to shore facilities. In the past, this bill came from the Exxon Valdez accident, and the thinking was that we wanted to regulate the largest transfers and to exclude smaller transfers such as those that come from marinas and things like that. At the time, Oregon did not have any export facilities, and so it was thought that a good way to differentiate a large transfer from a smaller one that may happen in a marina was to simply say that if we receive fuel, then that would be a regulated transfer, and so that's the genesis of that. The energy market has recently changed, and now there's a facility down in Clatskanie that is exporting Bakken crude oil right now in bulk. And House Bill 3103 simply seeks to close that gap and to make all transfers in bulk over 10,000 gallons a regulated transfer. So that is the... That is the crux of it. I can answer any questions if you have them.
And if I may, yeah. Madam Chair, I'll add, when Scott's referring to receiving or exporting petroleum...
state your name for the record, please.
Of course. Palmer Mason, Government Relations Manager for the Department of Environmental Quality. Just to elaborate a bit on what Scott is saying, when we're talking about export facilities, what we're talking about is moving... the petroleum from a shore-based facility to the ship. Currently, the department has authority for transfers the other way. We can ensure that we have facilities that are receiving petroleum products from ships have oil spill plans in place, that they have drilled their staff, they're trained, they're ready to respond in the case of a spill or an emergency. The authority that we don't have is going the other way, where, as Scott pointed out, it's an export facility, and the petroleum products are actually moving from a shore-based facility to a ship. So because of changes in the energy market, as Scott pointed out, we now have those facilities and more expected in the near future here in Oregon.
Okay, thank you. It seems pretty straightforward. But the question I ask, how many facilities do we have now, and how many are in the hopper for permitting?
We currently have 19 regulated facilities, and one facility is operating with rumors of several others that may come online in the next several years.
All right. And so I'm assuming when these statutes were originally drafted, obviously we didn't have any export facilities.
That's correct, Madam Chair.
So, all right. Thank you. Questions for the department?
Yes.
Senator Olson.
Did you have something to say, Palmer?
Well, I was going
to
add one more thing.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Just because in an earlier version, when the House was looking at the bill, there were references to liquefied natural gas. Those have been taken out, so there's no – this bill has nothing to do with LNG. Just want to be sure the committee knew that.
Right. I was going to say thank you for that clarification. I think that's good to get on the record. Senator Olson, did you have any other questions?
Yes, I did.
Yeah.
Kind of slicked the way you slucked that in there. got it, didn't I? In reading this bill, Palmer, I find it rather confusing that you could not, you only had a one-way transmission of that you guys oversaw, that going from the ship to shore and not backwards. Why? I didn't understand it that was in this bill.
Yes, Senator Olson. The reason was because no large-scale transfers were being conducted in the state. We don't have any oil production facilities in Oregon, no offshore platforms or things of that nature. And the thinking was that would probably stay that way just because of the geology of Oregon. And so the exclusion was simply made that the assumption was made that we would be receiving fuel either via pipelines, ships, or from facilities, and that's why the exclusion was in place to protect small marinas and also commercial fishing interests that transfer smaller amounts of fuel. A spill at something like a marina or a commercial fishing filling station, we could handle with our existing emergency response staff. But we do want to have more preparation for and drilling and training exercises and things of that nature for the larger facilities, the Chevrons and BPs of the world, because a spill of that nature is a much larger response that requires pre-planning. And we consider a spill and, whether the transfer is coming or going to a vessel, we consider the likelihood of a oil spill to be the same.
Follow-up?
Follow-up.
I'm still a little bit confused. I see that you exempted the marinas, but in reading the bill, it seems like the only other change is on page 2 where you said that transfers oil over navigable waters. It seems to me that when it says located on or near navigable waters, is that the change that means you can get it both directions instead of just one?
And, Madam Chair, Senator Olson, I can take you through this. This is a rather convoluted definition of facility, and so I can understand it's taken me quite a bit of time to read it and work myself through it. So the issue here is that the definition of facility refers, as you see, this is on page 2 of the engrossed bill, a pipeline or any structure, a group of structures, equipment, device, other than a vessel, so leaving vessel aside, that transfers oil over navigable waters. And so I could see why you're thinking that movement either way. But then if you go down to line 9 through 12, this is what's actually being deleted out of the bill. And specifically, it sort of repeats
that's
the same definition, any structure, equipment that's moving. And then if you get down to line 11, transporting in bulk, capable of storing or transporting 10,000 gallons or more of oil, but, and this is the key part, but does not receive from a vessel, barges, or pipeline. And it's that receiving that's moving from,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Right.
Thank you for that clarification.
Yeah, it was not really clear on the first pass of reading. It took me a couple of times reading through to get that. So that's sometimes, unfortunately, the way our laws are written are quite convoluted. Any other questions? Senator Hansel, did you have one?
No.
Okay. All right. Thank you, gentlemen. Stick nearby in case there's a couple other questions. But the only other person we have signed up to testify on this is Sue Marshall. Anybody else like to testify on this bill? And then we'll go ahead and answer the question from the work session, right? Okay. Thanks, Sue. Hi.
Chair Dingfelder, members of the committee, my name's Sue Marshall. I'm here on behalf of Willamette Riverkeeper in support of 3103A. I think it's a pretty straightforward bill, but we just wanted to lend our support to it. We don't think that the risk really changes if it's ship to shore or shore to ship, and there's a reasonable exemption for smaller fueling facilities. The bill was originally, or the law was originally enacted in 1991, and the state really hadn't envisioned at that time that we would be exporting oil, but things have changed, markets have changed. We are aware there's a new facility in the Columbia River, and we think it's reasonable prior to any further expansion in these facilities to make sure that we have the right regulations in place. So thanks for your consideration.
Okay, thank you. Any questions for Sue? Thanks to get off easy this time. All right, anybody else would like to testify on House Bill 3103A before we close the public hearing? Seeing none, we'll close the public hearing on House Bill 3103A. And it is not scheduled for a work session today, but certainly we will schedule it in the future. Okay, we have, we have recessed a work session on House Bill 3199A because we wanted clarification. We have our drafter here, or do we have? Yes. Hey, Chuck, come on up. Senator Hansel had a question on the making sure that this bill did not prohibit use of fireworks. Do you want to repeat the question, Senator?
Yes. The Dice amendment on line 12.
Well, actually, yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I was going to say, because that is, I think you withdrew your amendment. Senator Olson, that was your amendment, correct? I'm just making sure here. They're talking about for the Skylantern bill. You were not, you wanted to withdraw that amendment?
Yeah, I didn't even know we had it. We're going to talk about it.
Yeah. So did you want to clarify in the original bill?
Well, I'm sorry. I saw the A engrossed, and then I was thinking that the A4 was part of that A engrossed. So if that's not the case, then my question has been answered. I'm sorry for the confusion.
Chuck, you're here. You want to say anything?
Let me ask this.
I was going to say, you know, he's going to charge us for this time anyway, so you might as well ask
him a
question.
Yeah, okay. There was some concern raised that this might prohibit the traditional use of fireworks as defined by some of the other parts of this bill, and I wanted to make sure that that was not the case, or is it the case?
Chair Dingfelder, Senator Hansel, for the record, Chuck Taylor from Legislative Council's office. No, we are basically in the bill covering three things. To be an exploding target, the item would have to be designed for use as a target for small arms ammunition, and obviously fireworks would not fall under that. Tracer ammunition needs to be a bullet, so again, clearly not. The closest we come is a sky lantern, which is a self-contained luminary device. However, one of the qualifications there is that it is designed to become or remain airborne, and legal consumer fireworks in Oregon are very restricted on the height that they can reach. I am working off memory here, but I think it's like 6 feet in the air is the maximum for what you can go and buy from a fireworks stand legally. If you're going to display type fireworks, then you are going to have a permit anyway to do that, and it's all regulated through the local governments and local fire districts.
Okay, so I would take that as an answer to be a no. Does not prohibit use of fireworks.
Correct.
Although some of us on 4th of July in urban areas, I prefer that. All right, thank you very much, Chuck, for coming up. Appreciate it. Okay, so we do have a work session open. Did we make a motion already?
Madam Chair, just for clarification, Senator Olson did make a motion.
Okay, so Senator Olson moves that House Bill 3199A be reported out of committee with a due pass recommendation. Is there any other discussion? I see none. The clerk will call the roll, please.
Senator Bates?
Aye.
Senator Hanson?
Aye.
Senator Haas?
Aye.
Vice Chair Olson?
Aye.
Chair Dean Felder?
Aye. With that, the motion carries. And Senator Hansel, would you like to carry this
sure.
bill? We traded. I thought you were going to be doing the Gorse, so this is great. So for the record, Senator Hansel will carry House Bill 3199A to the floor. With that, we'll close the work session on House Bill 3199A. And we have a guest here, so we'll go ahead and open up that public hearing, as I'm sure the good representative wants to get back over to the House. So we'll go ahead and open up a public hearing on House Bill 2032A. Beth, can you provide us with an overview?
Madam Chair, House Bill 2032A requires payments for off-site compensatory mitigation to the Organ Removal Field Mitigation Fund be sufficient to cover specified costs and expenses, which may vary depending on the region of the state, and directs DSL to calculate the payment based on the actual costs and expenses. It takes effect January 1, 2014, and requires a report to the legislature by December 1st annually, declares an emergency effective upon passage.
Thank you. Thank you, Beth. And just to be clear, this is not Representative Bence's bill. This is the Department of State Lands bill, who will be coming up and testifying. And I don't know, Representative, did you want to wait until did you want to have the department come up and explain why the bill is needed first, and then you can talk about your amendments, or how would you like to do that?
Madam Chair, thank you very much, Cliff Bence, District 60, State Representative. And thank you for inviting me up. And if I could just say what I have to say, it's very short, and then run back to my meeting, if that's acceptable to the Chair.
Absolutely. That's why I called you up. I figured you had other things to do.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. This, I want to thank the department for its patience. You know, we've worked on three or four different amendments to this bill and ended up with what you find on basically lines 4 through 15 on the second page of the bill. The concept was to be consistent with the Oregon Rapid Wetland Assessment Protocol passed a number of years ago. The idea is that each year the department would report on the elements of the mitigation process called out in subsection 3A, B, C. The idea is that this wetland process costs money, and it is important that we replace the wetland appropriately, but at the same time with an eye toward that cost and what we can do to try to keep it manageable. There's no doubt we must preserve wetland. There's no doubt we must replace it if we choose to use some of it. The question is, how can we do it most effectively, and how can the department, working with everyone, make that work better? This bill actually is a reflection of that effort, because if you look at the essence of the bill, it's found on page 1, lines 24 through 26, and over to the top of page 2, lines 1, 2, and 3. The idea, of course, there is that the department can select from different sites for wetland mitigation, hopefully keeping the cost of the mitigation as low as possible, or at least as rational as possible. So I support the bill. Now that we've worked on it this hard, I'm more supportive of it. In fact, I carried it on the House floor. I'm happy with the bill as it is. I'm hopeful that it will result in a greater focus on cost of wetland mitigation, and maybe some ways that we can streamline the process to make it work even better than it's working now.
Thank you, Representative Bence, for your work on the bill, and we'll see if there's any questions before we let you go back over to your committee. Any questions for the representative? Yeah.
Well, I appreciate your work on it, Representative. You know, and as I was getting into it, looking at it, and seeing what your work, you know, what you did do on it, I appreciate it very much. And your endorsement and your work go a long ways for my approval of it as well.
Thank you for that, Madam Chair. Senator, thank you for that.
Any other questions before we let the good representative go? Great, thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, we will call up the Department of State Lands then. And the only other person we have to testify is Sue Marshall. I'm seeing a consistent theme here today. Welcome, Director. So you want to maybe provide a little more background on this bill and why the department brought it forward?
Thank you, Chair Dingfelder and members of the committee for the time this afternoon. I'm here today to ask for your support for House Bill 2032A, which would improve the department's ability to provide mitigation credits for developers around the state by making the cost more equitable. As background, the department is the implementing agency for the state removal fill law, which includes assuring that mitigation for unavoidable adverse impacts to waters of the state is completed as part of a removal fill action. We facilitate this from time to time through providing a mitigation fund mm-hmm. for cases where individual mitigation projects.
Would you just state your name again for the record? I thought I heard it, but I hear things.
Sorry,
sometimes.
I do that sometimes myself. Sorry. Yeah. For the record, my name is Mary Abrams, and I'm the director of the Department of State Lands. So back to the topic at hand, we do facilitate the mitigation efforts for removal fill actions from time to time through providing a mitigation fund for cases where individual mitigation projects would be costly on-site or might not succeed in replacing those functions because of restrictions on a particular site. Currently, the statute requires us to use a statewide average cost for these mitigation credits when we use our own mitigation fund for this for mitigation projects. And this average cost, therefore, because it's statewide, tends to overestimate the costs that are associated with mitigation in rural areas where land costs might be less expensive, and it underestimates the costs for mitigation projects in areas where costs might be higher, downtown Portland, for instance. It also doesn't allow the department to distinguish between different types of mitigation. So you mitigate for both stream effects on streams as well as wetlands, and those mitigation efforts can cost quite a bit, have a different cost just because they have sort of a different function that you're trying to replace. The change in House Bill 2032 would improve the equity and therefore the effectiveness of the mitigation fund by allowing cost calculations to be based on the true costs of mitigation work in a particular project, if that's available. If it's not available, it would allow us at the department to use a more fine-tuned regional cost estimate to cost out those credits. And so with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have about the bill.
I was like, any questions? Looks like folks are studying it. I did have a question about the reporting. Mm-hmm. And then as far as this is something that you do on a regular basis, and you're sort of now going to be compiling all this information together. Is that correct?
Chair Dingfelder, that's correct. We track all the information that's been requested under the amendment, and therefore we feel that it's a report that we'll be able to generate without any additional work on the part of the department. And we also believe it's probably a good idea for transparency and actually providing information to people who care about mitigation.
Because I noticed it didn't have a Ways and Means referral
right.
on it, so I figured that there wasn't much of a fiscal impact. And also, can you explain a little bit more what the Oregon Rapid Wetland Assessment Protocol is? Because the one thing that I was concerned about in this, and I didn't bring it up with Representative Bentz, but I knew that this was part of his amendment, is putting the date July 2010 in there. I mean, I'm not a wetland ecologist, but I work with a lot of wetland ecologists, and anytime you have any type of assessment or protocol that has a date, it's constantly updated. So I was a little concerned about having something in statute that specifically called out the July 2010 protocol. So does that mean if you use an updated version of that protocol, do we have to come back and do a statutory change?
Senator Dingfelder, that's a very good question, and my understanding is that we would have to come back and change that, but I would request that I invite Bill Ryan, who's the head of our Division for Wetlands and Waterways, to come up and answer that question.
Come on up, Bill. Was there any discussion over in the House when that amendment was added to the bill, if that was going to be problematic? So say, because you're being asked to look at the effectiveness of this protocol, and my understanding is that the protocol doesn't really protect the functions. It's an assessment tool, so it's a tool for you to be able to evaluate the functions and values of a wetland. Can you talk about how often that's updated, and is this problematic having it in statute?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Bill Ryan, Assistant Director at the Department of State Lands. And in answer to your question, Madam Chair, the assessment, it is an assessment. And so the language in the Dash 8 amendments or the engrossed bill says to use, to report on how that is used in order to protect or demonstrate protection of wetlands and waters in the state. And really, the assessment itself is not used in that way. It's the state's policy that is used to do that protection, and that's a tool that's used to help that. That being said, I would take a broad interpretation of the statute and report on how our programs are doing that and how we use that tool to do so. We do update our assessment tools and ORWAP. We're currently working on improvements to it and we'll be updating it in the next year or so. And so that specifying a specific date is a challenge. However, Office of Legislative Counsel was concerned about referencing in statute a document that is going to change over time. And so that's kind of how we ended up where we are.
Okay. Yeah. Well, maybe that's a conversation we'll have to have with Ledge Council. Senator Bates?
Thanks. Just a couple quick questions. How often is the mitigation fund actually used? And with this bill, if someone wanted to build a plant or something, you know, for jobs, Eastern Oregon, wherever, how long would it take them to, if they wanted to build and there was a wetlands nearby or there were affected wetlands, how long would it take them to get the credit, get it to the bank, and start building? I mean, is this bill going to speed that process up now, make it easier for them, less costly to do something of that nature?
Madam Chair, Senator Bates, yes, it would. Currently, the process is that the applicant would request to use the in-lieu fee or payment in lieu mitigation, that's that removal fill mitigation fund credits, and the department would look at that as part of the overall application, and if that was an acceptable use of credits, we would just approve that as part of our normal permitting process. What this would do is it would reduce the cost in areas that have low land values and low labor costs, and would increase the cost in areas that are higher cost. The reason that that's important is because we're required to, on a watershed basis, replace those lost wetlands. So if a developer was filling an acre and was using our in-lieu fee, we would have to replace that acre within 3 years to meet the conditions of our agreement with Army Corps of Engineers for that program. And so if we're not collecting enough money, we won't be able to do that in high-cost areas. And then in low-cost areas, we'd be collecting too much money and would have excess funds, and people would be paying more than they should have to pay.
Do you follow up?
Follow up. So right now, if someone wants to build, I'll pick a spot up in Burns, okay, and they have a mitigation problem and they go for the permit, without this, how long does it take them to get that permit done? And with this, what's the change?
Madam Chair, Senator Bates, actually there wouldn't be a change in the timing. I mean, currently the program is operating. This is just affecting the cost or the price that we sell those credits at. So it wouldn't affect the timing. The reality is that if they're using the in-lieu fee process, that's really pretty much the fastest way to get a permit, because they don't have to get approval for a mitigation site, acquire a mitigation site, build the mitigation site, and maintain that mitigation site. And so using that form of mitigation is actually very, very efficient for project applicants or permit applicants.
Senator, we do have a statutory limit for our wetland fill permits in the state, for at least the state portion. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, not for the federal, but we do. So this would affect, just to, for clarification, this would affect the cost and could drive down the cost of the project.
Correct.
Is that correct in how I'm reading it? Because if they have to pay the mitigation fee, mm-hmm. and they're in an area where right now we have a higher, you're saying the statewide average is higher, and it may, this actually might drive down the cost for a project.
Chair Dingfelder, Senator Bates, if I may, that's correct. And just to use the example that you brought forward, if you were looking at the Burns example today, we would be using, I believe, the number is $74,000 an acre for the cost of a mitigation credit, 1 acre. If we were looking at it based on this bill, we would be going into the area around Burns and saying, how much does land cost here? However, I mean, I think it's important to be clear that if we were talking to somebody in downtown Portland, the effect of this bill is going to be
higher.
It's going to be that it'll be right. higher, but we are required to replace those functions, and so the state's bearing the cost effectively in those higher cost areas currently, because the developer's not paying for it, but somebody has to.
Madam Chair, I want to go back to my original question, which was, how often is it actually being used? Mm-hmm. And if you're in Burns and you decide to build, how long does it take to get the permit through the bank? And that's what I really want to know. We're looking at business to want to start up. And I don't want them waiting 3 years to get something. Do you get it through in 90 days, or what actually happens?
Okay. Chair Dingfelder, Senator Bates, the program is used dozens of times per year for dozens of permits each year spread throughout the state. And then our standard permitting process is a 120-day process. And if the mitigation is using our in-lieu fee or payment in lieu mitigation, then that's not a problem with that time frame. And so it's a 120-day process.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions? The department. Okay, thank you. And I think we have one more person that would like to testify on this. Sue Marshall. Okay, Sue, back up.
Thank you. Just me and the agencies today, I guess. Chair Dingfelder, members of the committee, my name's Sue Marshall. I'm here on this bill representing Audubon Society of Portland and the Tualatin River Keepers. Both organizations very much value wetlands for all the multiple functions that they provide: flood control, fish and wildlife, habitat. There's a whole host of things. We have been concerned over the years. The goal that the state has set is no net loss of wetlands, so it's something we watch very closely and hope that through these mitigation projects we can achieve that. We support this bill. We think it will better address the actual cost to cover the expense that the state is reasonably expected to incur. In some cases, as you've heard, the cost may be too high as it's calculated now. In other cases, it may be too low. So we believe this provides some equity across the state and think it's very much a step in the right direction, and encourage your support.
Thank you, Sue. Any questions? Okay.
Great.
Thank you very much. Okay. Anybody else that would like to testify on House Bill 2032A? Seeing nobody's jumping up, we will close the public hearing on House Bill 2032A. We will open up our last public hearing for the day. That is House Bill 2031, another Department of State Lands bill.
Madam Chair and committee members, House Bill 2031 has a no revenue and no fiscal impact. It defines low potential resource rail property as located inside an urban growth boundary or within an area zoned for residential use on a lot or parcel 3 acres or smaller in size. designates DSL as agency acting for the state in any transaction involving mineral and geothermal resource rights in low potential resource property, declares an emergency effective upon passage.
Okay, thank you. Well, we have the Department of State Lands signed up, and that's it. Bit of a quiet day over on the Senate Environment Committee today. Welcome back.
Thank you, Chairman Dingfelder. For the record, my name is Mary Abrams, and I'm the Director of the Department of State Lands. The bill that we're talking about now, House Bill 2031, is really a proposal to simplify the process of releasing mineral rights for specific types of properties that have a low potential for significant mineral resources. And just as a bit of background for you all, you're probably all aware that the Department of State Lands holds in trust the trust lands for the state of Oregon. But in addition to that, we also own or manage mineral rights for almost all the lands that are owned by the state of Oregon, including those owned by other agencies. Plus, we own the mineral rights under about 750,000 acres of surface lands that are owned by other parties, so not owned by the state of Oregon. These can include properties in urban areas and small residentially zoned lots in rural areas, where really because of either the size of the lot, the zoning, the location, they have a low potential for mineral extraction development. If and when there's a need to release these mineral rights, which sometimes happens when a title transaction is occurring and they want to make the title whole, so they want to own the subsurface as well as the surface, approval from the state land board is now required. So this is, of course, the governor, the secretary of state, and the state treasurer, who meet only every 2 months. And so this can really slow down the process if we have to wait for the next state land board for a rather simple title transaction. The approval that they do has to be based on a geological study that is done by the Department of Geology and Mineral Industries here in Oregon to make sure that there is what the potential for mineral rights is. This takes time and it takes resources. There's a minimum of about $500 for each of these studies, and this can really slow down some of these rather simple transactions. An example of this, the last land board, we had several of these mineral rights. It was a request from the Department of Administrative Services, who had received some properties under a foreclosure issues, and they wanted to be able to turn around and dispose of them and couldn't clear the title until we released the mineral rights, and they had to wait for the land board to meet in order to release those mineral rights. This proposal would simplify the process. It shifts the authority to release the mineral rights from the land board to the director of the department only for these low potential sites. So this doesn't affect, you know, large mineral rights that we might have that might want to be developed on other properties. It streamlines and reduces the cost of releasing the mineral rights and therefore can facilitate transactions. So we ask your support for the bill. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Okay. I have a few, but I'll see if any of my members have any questions. Senator Hansel?
Primarily what the focus of this bill, it seems to me, would be that how many acres did you say are owned by let me get that for, was it 300,000?
The department owns or manages about 2.1 million acres of mineral rights for the state, so properties that are owned by the state, and then another 750,000 acres.
That's what
that are owned by other property owners.
3 million.
Yeah.
And
three quarters of a million.
Three quarters,
sorry.
Okay.
Yeah.
I just want to make sure, and it's that's probably the focus of what this bill is, and particularly if it's a 3 acre or below, it's mostly and zone residential. The landowner probably thinks they have the mineral rights, but inevitably don't. You have 750,000 of those out, or not all of them be residential, so mm-hmm. It just will streamline the ability for the private landowner to own the mineral rights under their property.
Chair Dingfelder, Senator Hansel, that's correct, and I would also submit that it definitely streamlines it also for us as a state.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Okay, any other questions? Senator Olson.
Chair. Mm-hmm. I live on an acre and 3/4. If I found gold on it, is it yours or is it mine?
Chair Dingfelder, Senator Olson, that depends on whether we own the mineral rights. And so we don't own the mineral rights under all of the state of Oregon, but we do primarily with lands that were given to us in trust, and we sold the surface at one point in time or another, but we chose to hold on to the mineral rights, and that might be because at that point they were more rural, or we thought maybe there were some minerals, and, you know, and now it's the middle of Gresham, and we don't, you know, and even if you have gold, you're not, well, gold you might, but if it was gravel, you wouldn't go in and extract it.
Thank you.
Just want to make sure that you're clean.
Yeah, I was going to say, I thought he was going to ask you now. So as far as how many requests are you talking about typically?
Chair Dingfelder, I hate to make it sound like we have the same number for everything we do, but we had three of these just in the last land board meeting. So I've only been on the job for 6 months, but I've already seen about, you know, six or seven of these. And so I'm guessing a dozen or so a year. It's not a lot, but again, it really holds up some processes.
Okay. Yep. Seems pretty straightforward. Okay. Any other questions for the director, Senator Hansel?
And this also includes geothermal rights as well?
Chair Dingfelder, Senator Hansel, yes.
Okay. And a follow-up, gas and oil.
Chair Dingfelder, yes, but again, you have to consider what we're talking about
small,
in terms of the
right.
parcels. And an example of this, again, going back to the ones that we considered with the land board at the last meeting, was a piece of property that was, were it out in an area that was more industrial in nature, it would have had gravel, an interest in gravel mineral rights from the Dogami study that was done, but it sits in the middle of a neighborhood in Gresham. And so you're not going to go into a residential neighborhood that's zoned residential and extract gravel or oil.
Although I used to live in Los Angeles, and you would see oil rigs in the middle of the city of Los Angeles all the time. But I know that our oil and gas deposits are fairly limited in Oregon. Okay, any other questions for the department? All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Director, anybody else like to testify in House Bill 2031? I don't see anybody running up. With that, we will close the public hearing on House Bill 2031.
Madam Chair, I don't know why I have the Beverly Hillbillies theme song. Which way?
Before you all run off, I do have one announcement to make, and that is that we are losing our committee administrator, Jennifer Luttman. Is going back to, well, she's going to her other job, which is, I know there's going to be a lot of sympathy because her other job is in Glacier National Park. And so this is Jennifer's last meeting today that she'll be with us. And I just wanted to say thank you, Jennifer, for all your hard work. You've been terrific in making sure that we stay on track and making sure we know when the our committee is being recorded and doing all the administrative procedures that make sure our committee runs smoothly. So with that, we have a little thank you note and card and a little thank you gift for you, and wanted to wish you well as you leave us to go to Montana, I'm assuming.
Now we have to do it.
Yes, so we wish you the very best, and thank you for all your hard work.
Thank you. It's been my pleasure.
What will be your what job will you have there in the park? Where do you work?
I'm a park ranger.
Oh, great.
Really?
But I work in public affairs.
Well, I hope you do get out every now and then. And
I
yeah, I was there last summer. It's just a spectacular place. And even though there's not many glaciers left, and soon there will be none. So you'll have to change the name of the park, I heard.
Dingfelder National Park?
Yeah, right. I don't think so. Well, thank you again, Jennifer. We really appreciate your hard work, and we wish you all the best. Beth, anything else for the good of the order?
Madam Chair, that's about it.
Okay, with that, we are adjourned.
See you then.